I am Maya Fisher-French and welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. A couple of months ago, I was having a conversation with financial advisor Munya Shumba, and he was relating a story about a woman working as a personal assistant who took out an investment for her newborn because she wanted her daughter to have R1 million by the time she was 21. Now, this sounds wonderful. And I mean, what a great mom to have. But as Munya and I were discussing this, the point was raised that this new mom was thinking about her child, but not her own financial future. What about her retirement? What about the fact that we have a national crisis where parents do not have enough money to retire and are now a financial liability to their children? So welcome to Munya, because we're going to carry on this conversation today.
Thanks for having me, Maya.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to unpacking this in more detail, because you actually wrote an article, which is what reminded me of our conversation. You wrote an article recently about the issue, about this issue, but also about the issue of black tax. And I absolutely loved the intro into that article where you wrote, there are no parents on the face of the earth that look at their newborn child at birth, wrapped up in a soft baby blue or pink blanket, look at each other and say lovingly, honey, we did it. Look at our retirement plan. So just explain to our listeners what you meant by that.
Well, there was a bit of sarcasm behind it. And, you know, I was really just trying to drive home the point that, you know, there's no parents that at any point want to be dependent on their kids. And the only way to prove that is to go right at the beginning, you know, to go right at the source and to look at the time, you know, the child was born and they think, oh, thank heavens, you know, we're going to be okay now. And the point is, you know, all of a sudden the parents are in their 50s and 60s. But now they are 70s and they are reliant on their kids. So the question now becomes, well, clearly that wasn't the plan from the get-go. So what was the actual issue? What was the plan? So that's what the article then unpacks, you know, as we go along. But I had to kind of like lay down those foundations to try and bust that myth a little bit.
And I think, you know, that's exactly in the article you were saying. And of course, as a financial advisor, you come across parents all the time. So you are having these conversations on a regular basis. And I look at so many, myself and all my friends and everyone, it's the same thing. And I think you say every ounce of resource is put to looking after children. And you say that they'll sit with you. And often it's actually the first touch point you'll have with someone is because they now have a child and now they're worrying about finances. They're saying, I want to educate my child. I want my child to have the best. And they put their own needs right at the end.
I think that's what happens when you become a parent, you know, where all of a sudden something takes over, where it's no longer you who's important. And there's this child now that's in the picture. And you obviously want to make sure that, you know, you're giving them the absolute best. But I think, you know, what people don't know as parents or as any individual is that so much progress can be made by just putting away small amounts of money as long as you're doing it for long enough, you know, and you don't necessarily have to give it all up for the child. And that's normally the misconception to say, well, look, you'd be amazed, you know, how far a couple hundred rand will take you over 30 or 40 years. You know, it's extremely powerful. And I think once you start to, you know, educate the individuals on the importance of just being a little bit consistent, starting early, they'd be amazed that they can actually have the best of both worlds actually in the end.
And let's go to that, because I want to ask you that question. Now, how do you find as a parent that middle ground? Because, you know, it's not just about buying your kid the latest iPhone, okay? Because for most parents, it's actually about education. They're having to sacrifice retirement funding in order to pay the school fees. So how do you argue with a parent saying, listen, you can't just be putting it all into the school fees. You've got to be looking at other things. How do you have those conversations?
I think it's a very difficult conversation to have. And, you know, for me, I think the only way to try and bring it home is one of two things. Number one, it's something as a financial advisor, if you've got a relationship with the client, if you can't bring it in at the inception, even at a minimum, what you have to do, you know, through that touch point that you have, you know, every 6 months or every year, is to try and bring it in gradually. And the number one thing I've always seen is if I do manage to get a client to commit to some kind of retirement planning, you know, as the years go on, all of a sudden it's 2, 3, 4 years that have gone by. And, you know, there's a little bit of money there showing up in the kitty. Then they turn around and they go, I've gotten this far just by doing this over the last couple of years. And they now see that the consistency is actually the key. All of a sudden, they took a look at 3, 4 years later and they say, well, we've actually been getting by just putting away this little amount, you know, on a monthly basis. How far would we get if we now actually did this or if we did that? And all of a sudden, it's kind of like working out where, you know, when you start to see a little bit of progress and, you know, the pants are feeling a little bit loose, where you start to say, well, you know, maybe I should do a little bit more or do a little bit extra or be a little bit more disciplined. And all of a sudden, you know, you start to really, really take off.
I do think it is about a mindset. And there is a mindset that there is this sacred ground that I won't go there. I won't tap into those retirement funds. It is just non-negotiable. And, you know, I must tell you, my husband and I have worked for ourselves. We've been through many ups and downs in our financial lives. Let me tell you, many.
Yeah.
And one of the rules we've always had is to never touch our investments, ever. It was just, we will cut everything down to the bone, but we won't touch our investments. But at the same time, we also agreed that we would educate our children to the best of our financial ability. So it was an understanding that it wasn't we will educate our children at any cost. It was within our financial ability. And that for us included meaning that we still kept our investment. So it was often finding that it's just having a basic principle in place. And, you know, they weren't, believing me, they've been tough times, but we would rather cut our grocery bills and our other bills then affect our children's education, for example. But I think one of the challenges I see is especially when women, you know, they have a child and they want to take that time off work, and they will, of course, they resign from their employer and they use the money from their pension fund.
So I'll tell you what, Maya, the ability to be able to make that sacrifice, just like you've touched on right now, to be able to say, I know how important this is long term. The only way that works is if you understand finance, if you understand numbers, if you understand how investments work, is if you understand that if I cash out this money, right, it's not about me catching up on that 300,000, 400,000, 500,000, you know, over the next 6 years. It's about the fact that I've lost 20 million, right, 20, 30 years from now. So it's very difficult for someone to see that if they don't understand the finance, which is where education comes in. And I believe that we have a role, and I say us, we have a role to put a bigger magnifying glass on that education. Because I'll tell you what, the more people who actually understand it and they go, oh, this is why this is important. I'm not saying everyone, but you'll have a lot more people who have that discipline to be able to dig in and to be able to dig deep when those tough times come to say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't change my car. Maybe we can actually downgrade on the grocery bill. Maybe we can make sacrifices everywhere else because this pillar here is so important. And maybe just to touch on one point, someone made a wonderful comment on an Instagram post recently. And this lady, she was actually responding to a post on investing long-term. And she said something, and then she says, Munya, it is sometimes so difficult to pay this premium every single month for my retirement planning. But you know what? Doesn't matter how bad it is, I do it anyway because I know how important it is. And then we actually continued that conversation in the DMs in a lot more detail. But that ultimately is the mindset because she gets it. And the more people that get it, not everyone, but a lot more people will have that mindset.
You know, I think it's also just little things, and I agree with you. I think it's understanding compounding, and I can't remember who said it. They said, he who understands compounding earns it, he who doesn't pays it, right? Or something along those lines. But absolutely. It is compounding. So now I often use this example of say, for example, you have 100,000 Rand investment, and there's a 10% return. That's 10,000 Rand. That doesn't excite people. I'm better off using that money to go on a holiday or pay off my bond or whatever, right? People think, 100,000, 10% return, 10,000 is not exciting. A million Rand in exactly the same investment, earning the same return, 10%, is now 100,000 rand, right? So 1 million rand, 10% is 100,000 rand. And I always say to people, how are you ever going to get to that point if you keep cashing in earlier? So you've got to grow it. And that's when compounding works, is when you're growing to 1 million. And suddenly your million's going up by 100,000. That's when you think, oh, thank goodness I left the money to get to the million. And I think that is, it is about education. It's about understanding how, what that looks like.
So I think there's two things here. The first thing is, you know, I think we have to be prepared to have an honest conversation to say, number one, it's going to take time. So if someone is looking to invest, the first thing I always say is, you know, if we're looking at really growing this money, we have to be in this for the next 10 years. Right? If someone is not prepared to have that kind of commitment, it's very difficult for us to actually work together, because that's the honest truth. We can't produce miracles in the short term, because unfortunately, the way that we work, unfortunately, doesn't work that way. But just to highlight that point, you know, you take it at 1 million rand. There's a video as well that I recently did, and it was going to take 7 years to get to 1 million. But the next 3 years, you were going to get to another million. And it becomes faster and faster as the years go on. And by year 20, you're doing something like 2 million every single year. And I think this was off 6 grand a month. And, you know, all of a sudden now it starts to excite you, but it accelerates the longer time that you've got in there. The problem is, you know, I mean, it's very difficult for me to look 10, 15, 20 years down the line when I would rather actually just use that money to enjoy today, you know? So I think, again, back to, if you can help people just visualize, you know, what that future can look like. And maybe even if it's a question of, well, I can't get this person to maybe put away what they should be doing or what they can afford to do or what I know their real potential is. But if we take a fraction of that, if we took 10%, 15% of what they can actually do, I'm still putting them in a better position. And they can actually look at it many years later and go, oh, is this how far we got with this? You know? And hopefully at that time, they can actually start ramping it up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we focus a little bit about why you should be doing this. But I wanted to look at the flip side. So you, as a, you know, a parent, why they should be doing more for their children, and maybe why they should be doing more for themselves and not quite as much and only focusing on the kids. But let's take a look at the flip side.
Yeah.
This is really the black tax side. You know, you're a young graduate and you've qualified. And I actually had this case of this quite recently, a young woman, 24 years old, starts her new job, you know, finishes university, starts her job thinking she's got this great salary, and so she has to support parents. And, you know, in South Africa, of course, we call this black tax, but it's across, it's true across all racial groups, right? To some extent, someone supporting family, supporting parents. I think with many black graduates, of course, they're supporting more than just their parents, their siblings as well, which is where this huge pressure comes.
Yeah.
But how does this young person go about meeting their financial needs? So providing for their children and their retirement, but also supporting parents and even possibly siblings.
So I'm in two minds about this, Maya. And the reason why I say that is there's the reality of what I've seen by dealing with multiple clients and assisting them for multiple years and being at the forefront of being able to see how things actually play out in reality. And again, this is across all backgrounds, you know, whether it's a young individual who's got an opportunity to work overseas, but he's taking care of his you know, family here back home, it doesn't matter. I picked up this trend recently. I've always seen that sometimes, for whatever reason, the individuals who actually go out their way and do more and actually go above and beyond and do it to take care of either their folks or their siblings, etc., tend to get ahead a little bit further, right? And I know that sounds like a crazy thing, but I've got a large sample size to actually demonstrate this, where it's, and it's not a sake of complaining to say, you know, I have to pay for school fees or I have to look after my folks or do whatever, but doing willingly. They always tend to get ahead further than other individuals, right? However, what they do differently is no matter what obligations that they've got towards, you know, their family, they make sure that they prioritize themselves first. Because ultimately, what you need to remember is that if you stop being able to take care of yourself, right, the whole house of cards falls down. So you can't take care of anyone if you don't take care of yourself. The thing you mentioned about discipline is being disciplined to say, you know, I need to make sure that I've got a budget that I stick to. I need to make sure that I've got a framework that I don't go beyond. And I need to understand that, you know, it doesn't matter how much I give. People are always going to expect me to do more. So we need to be able to put a cap And maybe that cap can adjust over time as my personal circumstances change as well. But beyond that limit, it's a question of, well, I'm sorry, it is what it is. You're going to have to wait until next month. I'm sorry, there's nothing left. You're going to have to wait for 2, 3, 4 months from now. And you have to be able to learn to say no. So that is the big key, what I've seen that they've got in common, is yes, they're willing to help, but they're also very good at saying no. Because they know, if they take off that seatbelt and anything happens to them, well, they've not just done themselves a disservice, but they've done everyone else a disservice by being too free or too willing to overextend themselves.
And I just want to interject there because I think this is an extremely important point. And one of the big things I pick up is debt as a result of this. So somebody starts working and the family demands are so huge and the parents simply say, well, you're now working. We need to finish. We want a house. We want this. We want that. And the children take on debt. That's how they meet those needs. And suddenly, within 2 years of them working, they are basically over indebted. This idea of straight up saying, this is all I can afford and I'm not prepared to put myself into debt for it, I think is another very, very important sort of personal rule maybe.
Yeah, I can't sign off on that advice to advise anyone to put themselves under any kind of financial pressure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as maybe someone might be upset with you, you know, the short term by, you know, being standing your ground and saying no, I definitely think that they'll love you in the long term, regardless if you manage to continue supporting them. I think a lot of it maybe comes from the comparison game. I'm not 100% sure, but I think, you know, as an individual, and I'm not stopping anyone from helping, right? And I'm not saying to anyone that they shouldn't help, but really critically, you shouldn't go above your means to support anyone else, because at the end of the day, it's never going to be enough. There's always going to be something new coming up. There's always going to be, you know, something else. And it's a tough thing to do. But I think not just in your finances, but in a lot of things in life, you really have to get good sometimes at being able to say no. And it's a tough thing to do. But if you can master that, you know, I think people, they understand your viewpoint straight away. And, you know, they can move on and they can accept that. I think people will love you even more by being able to say no.
And I think also this is interesting for me where a financial advisor can also play a role. Because you talked about the people who get ahead are the people who accept the family responsibility. But I think they accept responsibility in general for themselves as well. So they will tend to be more planned orientated, possibly working with a financial planner or a financial advisor to say, and it's in saying, because I think what happens is it's easy to be swayed when you don't have a plan. So if your family come to you and say, oh, but we need this and we need this, and you think, okay, well, you know, I have got some money. But when your money's all been allocated, you've got a budget, so you know what all your things are costing. You've got your retirement fund. You've got your emergency fund. Maybe you've got a family. You've started an education fund. Your money is allocated. That's how it works. You know, I think that's, to me, what I'm getting from this, is that people generally who plan tend to come out better in the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's great when sometimes a client can ask a question because, you know, to your point, a lot of the time someone might bring a loan agreement or bring, a credit card where they say, do you think it's a good idea to get into this? And it's only now when we start breaking it down and we look at the numbers and you say, okay, what's the interest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd be like, I don't think this is a good deal, right? But I don't think it's a good deal because of the following reasons, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what we can do is, I know you just got an increase. Why don't we put this off for another 12 months, right? But what we can do is let's work towards it. Because if we put away an extra X amount a month towards this goal, right? A, we avoid you getting into debt. B, you know, we can use your own resources to be able to pay this off. And it's going to be better for you for the following reasons, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's that person still comes to the rescue. Maybe not at the time when the family wanted it, but, you know, they avoid expensive loan agreements that will take even longer for them to get out of just by maybe having a little bit of a delayed gratification instead.
I actually did the maths on that. I looked at a 10,000 rand loan. Often people, like, they'll borrow 10,000 rand to help the family finish something at home or whatever. And I think if you simply say to your family, I've started working today, give me 7 months. I will put away the installment amount that I would have paid on the loan, and I'll give you the cash in 7 months' time, saving me an absolute fortune in interest. It is about having those conversations and not feeling guilted into immediate gratification, but actually, you know, having a plan. So I think those are, those are it. Yeah. So what, starting early.
Yeah.
When you say start early, is that about, it's just having the plan early?
It's definitely about having a plan early. And the one thing I've seen from my social media page, the number one demographic I get reached out to is young men. And this is, young men at university, at high school, right? At high school, at 18, 19. And they say, when I've watched some videos, I'm ready to start. What can I do? This is what I get from my parents. This is what I get consistently every month. I want to start right now. And I tell you now, some of the best stories I have in my career are about the people who started at 18 or 19 and have gone on to buy real estate in Cape Town through those same portfolios we started. Back then, it used to be 50 Rand a month. Now you can start for about 300 Rand a month. And they've built multi-million Rand portfolios from starting early. And, you know, because the habits now come in and becomes addictive, even as a student. All of a sudden, you know, you're in your third or fourth year and you're opening a portfolio and there's 40, 50, 60 grand in there, right? As a student, you turn around and you go, wow, I did this just from getting my pocket money. So what's going to happen now if I start working and I'm earning 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand? Right? And I'm now really stepping this thing up. How far am I going to get now? So it's also from a mindset to know what's possible from doing just a little bit on a monthly basis. And I think it feeds into that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think starting early as a young person, starting early as a parent, and that means both putting money away for education and for your retirement. So, I mean, starting early is probably relevant across everything we've spoken about, whether you're the parent or you're the young graduate, starting early really matters. Know your limits. Know when to say no. That also applies both to the young graduate and to the parent.
And I think on the starting early, what it does, Maya, is that, you know, it becomes something that is non-negotiable as a couple, if you're speaking about parents, within your budget. It's the kind of thing where you're not going to avoid groceries in a month, are you? You're not going to avoid putting fuel in your car, are you, right? And if you're starting early, it creates this mindset to say, this is something that is a mainstay within our finances, whether it's buying groceries, whether it's putting fuel in the car. We have to do those things on a monthly basis. So it's almost psychological to say, well, this is locked in. This is fixed in. Not something where you can say, I'm going to come in and out of it, you know, as and when I feel like it, you know, on a monthly basis. So if you start early as a couple, as parents, and you say, well, we know that this is something that is fixed and that is, we can't get out of for whatever period of time. I think that also helps to set the right habits over time.
And as I said, and that then feeds into to know your limits. And your savings and investments are not a negotiable. They're not something you're going to give up in order to say yes to someone. I think that's quite important. We had a special needs child. And I think if you want to know, people talk about school fees, let me tell you, you have a special needs child and it's another whole ball game altogether. And my husband took on extra work in order to
do
that. So I think sometimes one also has to say, well, how do we go about providing for our children? Are there other ways we earn extra and make that money just for the child support? So there are ways of doing that. And I think, you know, one of the other things, and maybe it's another entire podcast, but you send your child to school, and I'm talking even what we call Model C schools these days, where there's overseas trips. You expect to send your child on an overseas trip for 60,000 Rand. I was actually flabbergasted the other day when I heard a parent talking about this. So I think there's another society issue. Certainly in my day, no one was paying that kind of money for these trips. So I think there's a lot of peer pressure that comes with raising children when you're trying to pay for your retirement and give your child, you know, what all the other kids have. So I suppose that is it. But again, the final point you make is budget for it. Budget for whether you're paying a tax to your family whether you're supporting a child. Like, what is it? What is that number?
You make and I do have to make this point, Maya. Right, many years ago, this is 2016, and it was a young couple. They just started dating. And I think they got pretty serious. They said to me, Monya, listen, we're going to have kids and we're going to put something across for the child one day. And this is in 2016. No child in the picture. Only about 7 years later, when by the time a child came into the picture and they've been saving for many, many, many years, and there was an absolute fortune in there. And, you know, to have that kind of foresight to say, well, the child's here now and, you know, we're going to start now. And of course, look, it's a unique circumstance. However, you know, if it's something that you do want at some particular point, there's nothing wrong with getting on the runway, even at a minimal amount, right? Long before the child is even in the picture. It'll give you such a head start. And some of these things like overseas trips or sending them to a certain kind of school, you bring a lot of things in play by, you know, really giving you, you know, a big run up, you know, long in advance.
Wow. I mean, that is an amazing, amazing strategy. Those are serious planners, those people. But again, it actually comes down to buying your first car. You could buy a car for 200,000, or you could buy a car for 400,000. What could you do with that difference in that money instead? And one of them could be, if raising kids in the future is a plan for you, you could say, well, actually, I'm going to go for the less expensive car because in the future, I want to be able to support my family and my kids in the best way possible. So many of the decisions we make every single day, and I always say this is what the work that the financial education that needs to happen is, every decision you make every single day has an impact in the future. And it's understanding that impact, I think. But whether you're a parent, you're providing for your child now, what is that impact going to be on you in the future? Or whether you're that young graduate who, you know, who's needing to support their family, what if you're starting to take on debt to support them, what are those implications going to be? So I think a lot of food for thought there. Well, Munya, this has been such an interesting conversation. I've been thinking about how to sum it up, and it's probably my mantra, which is have a plan. Yeah. If you have a plan, it all works out. And I think you've said exactly that. Those people who have a plan are the ones who get ahead. So that's what you need to get ahead. It's not that difficult. It's actually that simple. Have a plan. Yeah.
Thank you, Maya. If I can just add one point to that, is that have a plan, but no matter what, you've got to stick with it. So no matter how difficult it is, just like that one comment I got the other day, which says it's not always easy. That's exactly what you have to do. Because, you know, if it's not easy, you kind of go through a certain patch and all of a sudden it gets easy again. All of a sudden things calm down. But, you know, you've preserved that investment and it's carried on ballooning and ballooning. And you've got 3-4 years of calm and you hit a real rough patch. And you're like, I've kind of been here now. I just need to dig deep a little bit. And you get through them. It's kind of like the stock market, up and down. Over time, it's a wonderful picture.
And actually, you build resilience during successful times, which means that when times are good, make sure you're building your resilience, which is all those investments and all the rest of it. And that will see you through as well a lot better.